That's right, it is the Happy Station Show. Hello everyone, I'm Keith Parent. It's very nice that you're with us for the next 55 minutes. We have a fun show today. A special guest that I told you about not too long ago. And we'll tell you a little bit more in just a little bit. Anyway, like I said, it's very nice to have you with us today. There's a few things that I want to mention on today's show about the program that we have, Media Network Plus. As you know, we also have a video supplement that we are doing, and it's been radio reviews and everything. But somebody suggested that we maybe expand on that idea, and that's exactly what we are going to be doing in the next edition, which will be uploaded this weekend, and you'll be able to find it at www.pcjmedia.com. That's pcjmedia.com. All right. Today's show is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be going to Africa, but more specifically to the country of Rhodesia. Now, I can hear some of you going, huh? Rhodesia? What's that? Well, Rhodesia is today known as Zimbabwe. Our guest actually worked for Rhodesian Television and the Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation in the 1970s, and his name is Derek Partridge. Derek Partridge, he's also an actor. He's been in television shows like the original Star Trek series, Murder, She Wrote, Dallas, and many, many others. And he's going to be joining us to tell us what it was like living in Rhodesia at the time and what it was like working for media in Rhodesia. So I thought that today, because we're going to be spending a lot of time on the continent of Africa, we would begin with Bert Klemperer and his orchestra with Zambezi. Bert Klemperer and his orchestra with Zambezi. In fact, here's a little funny story about that. The first time I heard that, I was probably I would guess 6 or 7 years old. And I couldn't remember where I heard it. So I called up my dad and I said, do you remember a track called Zambezi by Bert Hempford? And I think I said I was like maybe 6 or 7 years old and I was asking you, what station are we listening to that on? And you said, and that's the part that I didn't remember. Actually, it turned out to be the shortwave service of the Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation, which used to be picked up in other parts of the world besides Africa. So it's kind of an interesting fact that our guest today on the show was actually in Rhodesia at that time. His name, of course, is Derek Partridge, and he's going to be joining us on the program in just a little bit. Also, I want to tell you about the PCJ Summer Shortwave Contest. There is a jingle that you will hear at some point in today's show. When you hear the jingle, you send us an email and you will be entered into the lucky draw that we're having for June, July, August, and September. The grand prize being in September. The grand prize is worth $399 and is a brand new Sanjen ATS-909X receiver. Yes, a fantastic receiver. And, of course, in June, July, and August, people are going to be getting one each. When I mean one each, I don't mean every single person listening, but three lucky people who enter the contest will be having, what can I call it, Kevin? Kevin? He's saying a supplementary prize. Yes, a supplementary prize, as well as some other surprises as well. There are some other gifts as well. I didn't tell you about that, did I, yet? Well, that's because you have to wait and hear Media Network Plus this month to find out what those are. Yes. Trying to have as many winners as possible. Okay, now, since we're going to be going off to Rhodesia, I thought it would be nice to have a little bit of music from Rhodesia on today's program. Rhodesia, known today as Zimbabwe. We're going to listen now to a singer by the name of John Edmonds, who is from Zimbabwe, but he now lives in South Africa. Here's a song that is called The First Word in Rhodesian.
R is for the regiments who fight the winning fight. H is for the home fires that the folks are keeping bright. O is for the other ranks and officers as well. And D is for the diehards who believe in fighting hell. E is for the enemy that just won't ever win. S is for the spirit of our men that won't grow dim. I is for the independence that we have to shed. And A is for the arms that we will always have to bear. And the first word in Rhodesian is Rhodes. That's a name that everybody knows. It may be as Rhodesian as the flag white and green, but the last word in Rhodesian is in. R is for the regiment to fight the winning fight. H is for the home fires that the folks are keeping bright. O is for the other ranks and officers as well. And D is for the diehards who will even fight in hell. E is for the enemy that just won't ever win. S is for the spirit of our men that won't grow dim. I is for the independence that we have to share. And A is for the arms that we will always have to bear. And the first word in Rhodesian is Rhodes. That's a name that everybody knows. It may be as Rhodesian as the flag of white and green, but the last word in Rhodesian is in. And the first word in Rhodesian is Rose. That's a name that everybody knows. It may be as Rhodesian as the flag of white and green, but the last word in Rhodesian is in. Last word in Rhodesian is in.
The last word in Rhodesian is Rhodes by John Edmund on today's program. And why are we playing that? Well, we are actually going to be going to Rhodesia now known as Zimbabwe, with our special guest, Derek Partridge. Derek Partridge has been on a number of very well-known television programs, including the original Star Trek series. And he'll be telling us how he played a gay character on that, which is rather funny. I can see some people going, huh? What? Huh? Yes, well, stay tuned, listen to the interview, and you'll know what we mean. Now, to set the scene, I thought the best thing would be to close your eyes, all right? Close your eyes. Pretend right now that you're in Salisbury. Salisbury today is known as Harare, which is the capital of Zimbabwe. So, pretend you're in Salisbury. The year, let's see, 1978, 1977. You just finished dinner, and you then turn the television on to Rhodesian television, and this is what comes up on the screen.
Good evening. We're starting off tonight on the martial arts. With me in the studio to tell us something about one specific aspect of them are Patricia Backer and Eric Morris. Good evening and welcome to you both.
Good evening.
Well, although the patch wasn't said, I, in essence, became a non-person because we in Rhodesia were subject to United Nations sanctions, and I, in effect, had broken that by going out there to work. No, it never in any way affected me by people saying that, but I know exactly what you're talking about from what happened to you, and that would have been the attitude from Prime Minister Harold Wilson, but it didn't seem to permeate down to many other people. In fact, I would say the majority of the people in England were very pro-Rhodesia. They were not on the side of Harold Wilson. Many, probably the majority of Rhodesians were of British origin. Rhodesians came from, you know, many countries around the world, but the majority certainly would have been of British origin.
When you ended up at the Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation, you said the decision took 10 seconds to go down there. And, you know, they're saying, okay, come down here as a TV presenter. This was your something that you've been dreaming about for all this time. What was it like the first day that you showed up for work and said, okay, we have a TV show to do?
Well, first of all, it wasn't the Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation. It was Rhodesian Television. At the time, Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation was the radio station, and it was state-controlled. RTV, Rhodesian Television, was a private company, very successful, and a completely independent entity from it. Later on, I'll tell you what happened with that. But at the time, no, it was an independent entity. Mike Hart Jones, for my first talk show, gave me two priests who were both very talkative and very controversial because they came from opposite sides of certain religious beliefs. So I didn't have to do one heck of a lot. Yeah, I suppose it was, but it seemed to come very naturally to me. I really didn't have any problems with it. I just got on with the job and did it. Because of the war, we did have a teleprompter, but we didn't have enough personnel to operate it. So for the news, you read scripts which you had previously typed or the news department had typed. And it was rather funny. We were rather formal there, sort of, you know, suit and tie, but because of the heat, we usually had sort of bathing trunks underneath where you couldn't see them. It actually reminds me of the early days of British radio broadcasting when Lord Reith was in charge. And this is for radio, I stress. He insisted that his radio newscasters were tuxedos, dinner jackets, with high pointed wing collars digging into their throats. It's hard to imagine anything more stupid. But no, not really much of a problem. But frankly, Partridge was a live show, so things can go wrong, and you often find yourself sitting in your seat, and you can see the control room, and you can see people panicking madly, and you have to sort of sit there very calmly and try and get through it. And I remember once I was set to interview one of the Rhodesian Air Force squadron leaders, and he was late. Well, it's a live show, you have to go on. So I sat in my chair, and I swiveled around interviewing myself until he rushed into the studio and saved the situation.
Well, you know, when you were working for Rhodesian Television, you said it was a private company, and there were UN sanctions against Rhodesia. The equipment that they were using at Rhodesian Television was, it was black and white. They didn't get color until the early 1980s. Where did the equipment come from? Was it surplus equipment from the UK?
The equipment, I'm sure, came from South Africa. I mean, most stuff came from South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, during sanctions, South Africa very kindly supplied us with many, many things. And, of course, benefited financially very strongly from it. You know, we had sanctioned busters all over the world clandestinely acquiring equipment that we needed for every aspect of life and living. But and there was a certain amount of rationing. There were certain shortages, but nothing that was really serious that didn't impinge on one's daily life. One thing about the news, though, you would read your newscasts, and then you would go and listen to the BBC to see what the news really was. You know, there was a certain amount of censorship, I suppose you can call it that, but when you're at war with a terror organization, it's not unreasonable that you have to have some control over what you broadcast to people. It's a very small country, very close-knit, and one of the worst jobs that we had to do every night when we started off the newscast, the first item was, Combined Operations Headquarters regrets to announce the death in action of, and then you would sometimes read your own friends' names. That was tough.
During the time when you were presenting Frankly Partridge and also the newscast, you said that RTV was a private organization, unlike the Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation, but would, for example, the newsroom or yourself or the producers, say, get phone calls from the government saying, look, we heard that you have this story. We wish that you wouldn't go ahead with it.
No, I simply don't know the answer to that. I imagine that in the newsroom where most of the stories were written, there was some form of control, some form of checking to ensure that what went out was not something they didn't want to go out. But I was not personally aware of any direct censorship.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I was listening to some air checks of the Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation, and I think something that would surprise many people, because when I mentioned that I was doing this interview with you, people that say didn't know that Zimbabwe was once Rhodesia, and there are some people out there who didn't know that, they were thinking, oh, African broadcaster, it probably sounds like everything else out there today, and it didn't. I mean, RBC sounded very, very professional.
Oh, it was indeed. The people there tried their very best to emulate the BBC, even though they were the RBC.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the ambition of a number of them to someday get to Britain and work for the BBC.
You know, there were some people also, very well-known people that worked for the RBC. One of them is who was also a comedian by the name of Warwick Starr.
No, I knew both Rex Starr and Clem Soleil more by name. For whatever reason, I think that by the time I got there, they were either not working there anymore or working less. And I think I may have met them, but I don't have any particular memories of either of them. But they're both sort of legends for Rhodesians.
Now, you're from the UK, and you were working in Rhodesia, and the British government was very, very forceful in pushing sanctions toward Rhodesia. How did the local population see you? Did they see you as somebody, oh, you see, look, people do support us. People, you know, he's from the UK. Did they welcome you with open arms?
Very much so. I remember when I started off doing a weather forecast one night, and I said something about your weather will be so-and-so, and Mike Hart Jones, after the broadcast, said, it's not your weather, it's our weather. I felt that they adopted me as a Rhodesian, which is exactly what I felt like, and I adopted Rhodesia as my adopted country. It's still one of the most wonderful memories to me. I still even carry in my wallet my Rhodesian identity card. It was made of metal because this was for the elections, and if the ID cards had been made of plastic, they could have been easily forged. But the metal process was too expensive and too difficult. So, yeah, that's still in my wallet. And I remember he used to go through the scans at the airports and something would go off and I'd go, oh, damn, it's my metal identity card.
When you were in Rhodesia and doing the TV series, how long did that run for, and what was your deciding factor on leaving?
Everything I did there, the news, the Frantic Partridge, the Quiz Kids, and I did many Message to the Nation specials. I was there for 2 years. Then what happened is that the Minister of Information, who was a great supporter of me, died. And at the same time, somebody in government decided that RBC, the radio, should take over RTV. So that it became, again, a totally government-controlled entity. As a result of that decision, virtually the entire staff of RTV resigned in protest. Some 25 people, all the top producers, directors, technicians, engineers, everybody resigned. They just weren't prepared to work for what we considered to be the idiots at RBC.
Mm-hmm.
This was an incredibly brave decision because it wasn't like in any other country where you've got 10, 20, 30, 50 other TV stations you can go to. We had one television station in Rhodesia. So they were, in fact, cutting off their jobs and their professions, and they had nowhere else to go. I stayed on for a while because, unknown to the people at RBC, who had always been very jealous of at RTV, I had a contract, so they couldn't get rid of me initially. When the contract came to an end, they were only too happy to get rid of me. At that point, some people decided to get up a petition to keep me in RTV and in Rhodesia. And there were sort of booths set up all around the major cities with people collecting signatures to keep Partridge in Rhodesia. And ultimately, it was as if you compare populations, it was as if about 10 million Americans signed a petition saying we want to keep this guy. And this petition was presented to the head of RBC, a very unpleasant Irishman called Jimmy Neal. It didn't achieve anything, and so eventually I left. I did return to the country after that because this Rhodesia as it really is leaflet I did, I revised it and did a new version. So I came back to the country to do that.
What is it like if somebody was to say to you, Derek, what do you want people to remember about Rhodesia? Because Zimbabwe today is a very, very different place. I mean, inflation is just skyrocketed. I mean, if you want to buy a liter of milk, it costs nearly 10 million shillings.
Well, I have a banknote in my wallet. I have one for $50 billion and one for $100 trillion, which was worth $15 American. They have now gone off the Rhodesian dollar and they're using the South African rand and the American dollar as their currency. Yes, it is a very different country. In the old days of Rhodesia, there were some ancient ruins in Rhodesia called the Ruins of Zimbabwe, which Eric von Daniken in his book, Chariot of the Gods, wrote about. Very mysterious, nobody knows their origins. But one of our tourist brochures was to say, come to Rhodesia and see the ruins of Zimbabwe. Now we say, come to Zimbabwe and see the ruins of Rhodesia. We used to be the breadbasket of Africa. We exported food to many African countries. We are now the basket case of Africa. Mugabe has completely and utterly destroyed the country and its people. The average age expectancy in Rhodesia now is something slightly in excess of 30 years. And Mugabe is now in his mid-80s. And all we can hope is that he dies very soon.
You know, it's really amazing because some people that I've spoken to, they say the people that were against Rhodesia, they've all said, oh, there was media censorship. Ian Smith had a network of spies and censorship and everything else. But people that I've spoken to who, like yourself, who were in Rhodesia at the time, including blacks who left to move to the United Kingdom and other parts of the world, said that wasn't the case. That's what it's like now.
Well, something that reminds me that I put into my leaflet, one of my black broadcasting friends at RBC said that blacks are far worse than whites. They are the worst oppressors and exploiters of blacks, far worse than whites. And that was a blunt, and I said, well, could I just say they could be? He says, Derek, you can modify it if you want. I'm just stating categorically that is the fact.
Have you been back since?
Only that time to, well, visit all my friends and to redo the leaflet Rhodesia as it really is. However, a situation came up quite a few years later by pure coincidence. This is when I'm living in Los Angeles. I was asked to go an audition for the lead in a film called Kariba. The lead was a police inspector who was investigating a bomb which had been placed on board an Air Rhodesia flight. And I went in to meet the people and said, I have to tell you, you got it slightly wrong. It was not a bomb placed on board. It was a SAM-7 missile fired from the ground, a surface-to-air missile. And they said, well, what the hell do you know about it? I said, well, it just so happens I was the newscaster on duty that night when it happened and had to read the death of three of my friends. So that was quite an amazing coincidence. Unfortunately, their funding fell through, and so it never happened. And I thought that was the time I will be able to go back to my country.
After you left Rhodesia, after you left the second time when you went back to redo the leaflet, where did you go?
I think at that time I went to New York, and then somebody approached me, and I found myself in Florida, in Miami, on a radio station where I did two-hour talk shows every day and an hour of news in between. So it was a good solid five-hour stint.
What was it very different working in the U.S. than it was in Salisbury?
I was no stranger to the States, you see. I'm, in fact, half English, half American. My mother was American.
Oh, okay.
So I'd spent quite a bit of my life in the States up to that point, so I was not unfamiliar with it. It wasn't culture shock.
I think what I'm actually leading at is because the way you described, you know, RTV, it was sort of like, you know, this whole big family together, and we were trying to do the best we could under the conditions that we had, to going to a country that has everything.
Well, it was not the happiest of experience because a couple who had a television station, ironically, in Las Vegas, where I now live, had sold their TV station to Johnny Carson and then bought this radio station in Miami. The wife then hired the director of a travel agency to be the director of broadcasting. Well, she didn't exactly have much experience or credentials, so that was a major disaster. They then started firing people who'd been there for years and years, had a following, et cetera, just put up a notice on the board saying, you know, effective tonight at 6 p.m., so-and-so is no longer with the station. Well, at some point, I'd had enough of this nonsense, and I had become sort of like the star thing of the station because I was doing 5 hours a day. And so I just put up a notice on the board saying, effective 6 p.m. tonight, I'm no longer with the station. And that was the end of that one. I just thought it was a little bit of, you know, for the cruel way they treated the people who'd been there for years.
It's funny you tell me that story because that's sort of how I resigned from a job in 2005. I was having, we had some new managers in, and I didn't like them at all. And on a Friday afternoon at 5 minutes before my on-air shift was about to end, I said, oh, by the way, this is my last show. I won't be here Monday. There'll be somebody new. And management didn't believe me. They didn't believe me until Monday at 2 o'clock. There was nobody in the studio. I was at home.
Right. Didn't you also kind of get your revenge on the person who told you you'd never work again for CBC?
Yes, I did, actually. When I sold the documentary idea to the Brits, and this guy's department bought it.
Yeah, revenge is definitely sweet.
Well, as I said to somebody, you know, sometimes it takes time. Sometimes it takes time. And, you know, it was interesting because before we recorded this interview, we were talking back and forth by email. And, you know, it's funny because I think I'm only 40 and you're a little bit older than me. But it's funny because we're sort of very similar in many ways. I mean, when I went off to Cuba, it was just by accident. They said, oh, would you be interested in coming down here to host our English language programs to North America and Europe? And it took me 10 seconds to decide, you know.
Yeah, it's very similar, those experiences we had.
Let's get on to...
two pariahs of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Let's talk actually about one thing. When I was looking at some of the TV programs that you were in, you were also in the original Star Trek TV series in an episode called Plato's Stepchildren. And I know I have to ask this because there's somebody here who said, oh, you have to ask him about it. How did you get that gig and what was all that? What was that like?
Well, that was just, you know, my agent at the time submitted me for a role along with countless other people. And they happened to pick me and I found myself playing a 2,500-year-old gay Greek. Which my wife at the time says was typical typecasting. Now think about it. Anytime you see a film made in Hollywood or a TV series made in Hollywood, if there's an Englishman in it, he's almost invariably gay. I don't know why, but the Americans just think of all Brits as being gay.
I think it's because of the handkerchiefs coming out of the sleeves or something.
This particular episode of Star Trek was somewhat historic because we as ancient Greeks possessing telekinetic powers forced Kirk to kiss Uhuru and forced Spock to kiss Gene Roddenberry's wife. I've forgotten the character she played. So it was the first black-white kiss on television and the first intergalactic kiss on television. Now, the BBC, in all its wonderful prudity, refused to show the episode because of the black-white kiss, as did certain states in the southern part of America. How's that for racial prejudice?
That really says a lot, because even at the time, if you watch British television, they were very outspoken against racism in the U.S., but they did basically the same thing.
Touching back on something before South Africa, when I think of Nelson Mandela, a political prisoner who became the president of his country, if you had taken a film script with that as the synopsis, to anyone saying, here's a guy who's been in jail all his life and he ends up being the president of his country, they'd have laughed you out of the office. And this remarkable man achieved that.
Let's just actually touch on South Africa for a moment, because you did spend a little bit of time there and you also lived in Rhodesia. It's been suggested by some people that South Africa could be going in the same direction as Zimbabwe. Do you see that? And do you understand why people would actually say that?
To some extent, but the presence of Mandela works against that. His successor was not that great, and the current president, I mean, one of the most extraordinary things about him is that he refuses to acknowledge the existence of AIDS, even though there is a higher incidence of AIDS there than almost anywhere else in the world. And I think he came out with some extraordinary suggestion one time that eat broccoli. I may be wrong in that, but it was some utterly ludicrous suggestion.
Yeah, it was the minister of health suggested to people to eat like roots and herbs.
It was something of that nature, yeah. The problem is that in many cases, the blacks have not had the experience of running countries that white people have, and that does handicap them in trying to run their own country. So I'm not blaming them for that. It's simply because they were not allowed to have that experience, and then they suddenly get dumped into the job. It's kind of difficult. Now, in Rhodesia, yeah, Mugabe spends a fortune buying his cronies. He gives them all the white people's farms, he gives them all expensive cars and all kind of perks to buy their loyalty. To some extent, I'm sure that happens in virtually every African country. I mean, there are 52 countries in Africa. I think about four of them have something resembling a democratically elected government, and the rest are either military or civilian dictatorships. There's tyrants in charge, like Mugabe.
Mm-hmm.
I refer to Mugabe as the Saddam Hussein of Africa. because he systematically tortures and murders his opponents. I'm reading at the moment a book called The Fear by Peter Godwin, which details in harrowing detail the atrocities committed against the people in Rhodesia, the political opponents of Mugabe, the MDC. It's quite horrendous.
Let's move on to your latest project, because there is a connection between you and British actor Leslie Howard, who died in a plane crash. You have a film coming out, and we don't want to give too much away, but what is this connection?
Okay, I was sitting in a plane on the runway in Lisbon Airport, Portugal, waiting to fly back to Britain. I was 7 years old. It was flight 777. At the last moment, Leslie Howard came along, and as a VIP, he and his manager took my place and my companion's place because we were the most unimportant people on a plane, which was done in priority of importance. The plane was then shot down by the Germans over the Bay of Biscay with the loss of all life. So basically, I owe my life to Leslie Howard. And a couple of years ago, I went over to London and hosted two films, one called Leslie Howard, The Man Who Gave a Damn, which is all about his life, and the other is The Mystery of Flight 777. There were many, many theories of conspiracies that Leslie Howard was, in fact, working for British intelligence. He just completed a tour for some cultural organization. There were other theories that the Germans had shot it down because certain others of the passengers were targets for them, people who were helping the Allied cause. In the course of my interviews, I interviewed the son of the navigator of the plane, who had spent a week with the pilot in charge of the German squadron, and it turned out that it was purely accidental. The German flight of Junkers had been on a routine coastal patrol when they came face to face, in a sense, going in opposite directions, with the Dakota. Before they identified it, they immediately started attacking on the basis of you attack before somebody attacks you. And when the colonel in charge of the flight eventually saw the civilian markings, he called off his planes, but by then it was too late. The plane had been hit mortally and plunged into the sea with the loss of all life. So there was no conspiracy. It was purely chance, purely an accident. And this account was given by this colonel shortly before he died. And as you said, I have nothing to hide. I have no reason not to tell you the truth. That is what happened. So that blew a lot of conspiracy theories out the window. And strange enough, by coincidence, at one point, I had met Leslie Howard's son at a party. And he was just completing a book called In Search of My Father. And I was able to add some information as one of the last people to see him alive, which was then incorporated into the book. And the first film, Mr. Howard, The Man Who Gave a Damn, is having its press premiere in a few days' time in the cinema at Leslie's old home in Surrey.
Because that happened so many years ago, and when you heard that the plane had gone down and Leslie Howard and everybody else on board the plane had died, did you think of it differently then? Like, when you look back now, do you say to yourself, you know, I don't think I would have ever had the career that I've had. I don't think I would have ever been able to do everything that I had if I had not switched the seat with Howard and his manager, and compared, let's say, to back then when it happened?
I don't think so. I mean, it happened. I'm fortunate enough to be here, and that's about the only way I can look at it. It was just one of those quirks of fate. Quite often you hear stories of people who accidentally missed a plane which went down. Fate has some strange hands to play, and sometimes it plays into somebody's good fortune, and sometimes it's somebody's ill fortune. So, yeah, I'm obviously very happy to be here. And I'm sorry it had to be at the expense of a very fine actor.
Let's get back to Rhodesia for a moment. I mean, you left many years ago. Do you still have contact from, let's say, do you ever get the occasional email out of the blue from people saying, hey, you know, I'm from Salisbury, I've been living in the U.S. now for so many years, I used to watch you every night.
Yes, there are still contacts. And in fact, there is an organization in the States called the New Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation, run by a former Rhodesian police officer called Dave Cushworth. And in fact, on that site, if anybody wanted, they could see a couple of episodes of Frankly Partridge and an episode of Quiz Kids. So, yeah, I still have people I stay in touch with, particularly Mike Hart Jones, the former director of Rhodesian Television, Harmon Cusack, who was my director, who was one of the top film cameramen in South Africa, Anne Shaw, who was then Anne McCormick, who's the lady who was Mike's PA, who introduced me to him. She now lives in Scotland. I stay in touch with them all the time. And in fact, I may be rejoining forces with Mike and Harmon shortly, as we're in discussions on going to Swaziland, which is within the body of South Africa, to do a documentary about the King of Swaziland. So we're hoping very much that the old team can be reunited and produce another film.
How much of the material that you did at television and radio do you have? When not too long ago, I contacted someone at the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation, and they said to me, "Oh, everything that from that period is gone. We destroyed it."
I'm not surprised. You say, "Well, there you, in a sense, have answered one of your own questions about what happens when black people take over from white people. Sometimes there are some very mean, nasty things done." While I was there, this was very unapparent from the population within the country. It was only perpetrated by the two terror groups led by Robert Mugabe and Joshua Nkomo. But other than that, as I said earlier on, the relations, personal relations between blacks and whites was the best I had ever seen in my life in any country.
When you left, did you take a lot of material with you?
No, I had two programs of Frankly Partridge, one of the Quiz Kids, I think maybe one of News, and I had them on the old big U-matic tapes, which have now been put onto CDs. Incidentally, I should also just mention, if anybody wants to see anything of my current work, if they go to my website, which is very simple, www.derekpartridge.com, they can see all the stuff I do. And Derek is D-E-R-E-K. And Partridge is like in a pear tree, or the Partridge family.
We will, of course, have a link to the website for this show right now. Derek Partridge, thank you very much for taking a little time, or rather a long time, to talk with us today. It's been a great pleasure to hear the stories of a country that so many people have so many misconceptions about.
That is so true. Keith, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Mountains standing by you ever guard you, and the rivers wash your spirit bright and clean. May the animals and birds sing of a peace that is to come, and not the glory of a land that might have been. May God be with you and keep you strong. Rich and long. May the lives that you have taken be for reason, and the pain that you have suffered make you strong. May the seeds that have been sown bring out the fullness of the future. May God give you the strength to right your wrongs. It's just a dream, I know, but dreams set you free.
dreaming can ease your mind and bring you peace. May the sweetness of your soil yet bring you riches, and your pastures ever fill your belly's need. May the nations that you harbor find a way to live as one. Keep your standards high and not give way to greed. May God be with you and keep you strong. May your tomorrows be rich and long.
PCJ Radio would like to make you a winner. PCJ Radio is giving away three Texan 920 World Band receivers to three lucky winners in June, July, and August. In September, we are having a grand giveaway of a brand new SanGen ATS 909X worth $399 to one lucky winner. To enter, let us know how you heard this program with the date and time, and answer the following very simple question. What does radio mean to you? You can send your entries to ats909x at gmail.com. Again, that's ats909x at gmail.com. If you wish to enter by snail mail and receive a small thank you gift for entering, you can find our postal address at www.pcjmedia.com. Winners will be announced on a monthly basis on Media Network Plus. So, good luck!
Zachtjes stikt de regen op mijn zolderraam. Ritme van de eenzaamheid. Die regen zegt we waren zo gelukkig samen, maar nu is dat verleden tijd. De regen valt bij stromen, het is een trieste dag, want je liet me staan alleen. Ik ken nu de betekenis van tegenslag, omdat je met mijn hart verdween. Kom, vertel maar regen wat je doet. Zeg, maak je tussen ons een beetje goed. Ik heb niks aan een ander, want ik hou alleen maar van haar. De regen valt bij stromen, het is een trieste dag, want je liet me staan alleen. Ik ken nu de betekenis van tegenslag, omdat je met mijn hart verdween. Ik voel, maak haar hartje vurig, want ze is zo cool. Vraag beste regen aan de zon, hoe of je dat doet. Zachtjes stikt de regen op mijn zolderraam. Het ritme van de eenzaamheid. Die regen zegt we waren zo gelukkig samen, maar nu is dat verleden tijd. Luister naar die regenbui. Pere, pere, pere. Oh, oh, luister, luister, luister naar die regenbui. Pere, 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 pere. Oh, oh, luister.
From Holland, Rob Nijs with Ritme von Regen, otherwise known as... Oh, I've gone blank, haven't I, Kevin? I wrote it down on a piece of paper, which I seem to have left in the control room. Rhythm of the rain, right? Yeah, that's it, Rhythm of the Rain. Oh, you see, it is the heat. We haven't actually had rain for quite some time, and it's been a little hot. And somebody recently asked me a question via our Facebook page. They said, when you get temperatures of 37, 38 degrees centigrade, do you still drink hot coffee? Yes, I'm a masochist. No, actually, I do, only because there is air conditioning. If I'm outside, I will not drink hot coffee sitting in a cafe somewhere, sitting on a terrace, when it is that degree, when it's that temperature. Anyway, okay, I think we should be ending soon. Oh, it is one of those days. It is just one of those days. Okay, anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for on this edition of the program. Once again, if you want to have a chance to win the radios that I just told you about just about a couple of minutes ago, go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com. If you want to find out more about Derek Partridge, there will be a link to Derek's website for this show, the show for June the 11th. You'll see it on the homepage. Just click there, as well as some other things as well, including a link, which is, you'll have a fun time at this place, for the new Rhodesian Broadcasting Corporation, which includes clips from the shows that Derek did when he was in Rhodesia, including a lot of other surprises as well. You'll find that all at pcjmedia.com. Also, at the same time, before my voice goes, I want to remind you about our Facebook page. Just do a search for PCJ Media in our Facebook page. Click on Join the Group, and that's all you need to do. Okay. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for. It's amazing how much time goes by, or how short a time goes by so quickly. Yeah, so quickly. Oh, yes, I did want to mention this. Richard here. That's his name. No, isn't it Richard H? We can't find it. Anyway, he sent us an email, but he just included Richard and then H. So we don't know if it's here, there, anywhere, whatever that is. Anyway, Richard H in Australia was asking a question if we're going to be doing another day of live Happy Station shows where we do each edition of the show live to every region. Yes, we are. And that's going to be coming up in the month of August. So they're going to be an entire day of Happy Station shows. They're going to be longer. They're going to be 2 hours in length. And we're going to be doing the show live to every region that we go to. Now, our partner stations, by the way, Richard, that pick up the show, are only going to be carrying 55 minutes of that. But I'll explain more about that on next week's program. Okay. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time. I am mumbling today. Oh, I think it's because I haven't eaten yet. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for. On behalf of our technician, Kevin Lee, our production assistant, Johan Backer, this is Keith Parent saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.